welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. In Numbers chapter 13, we read the report that the 12 spies gave after they reviewed the land of Canaan as Moses had directed them. And before we continue the lesson, we want to read from Numbers chapter 13, verses 25 through 33. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. The Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so were we in their sight. Now after 40 days, these spies on their mission reported that the land was indeed a land that flowed with milk and honey. But they also had a negative report concerning the inhabitants of the land, saying that there were giants there. Their cities were walled. They made the Israelites appear by comparison to be but grasshoppers. Well, the report was very discouraging to the people of Israel. You'll notice that all the people of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, chapter 14 and verse 2. The whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in this wilderness? Now, two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, they gave a somewhat different slant to the report. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes and spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, The land which we pass through to search it is indeed an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land, and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel ye not against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. Numbers chapter 14, verses 6 through 9. But the people reacted against them so strongly that they wanted to stone Joshua and Caleb. The actions and the attitudes of the Israelites and that of the 10 spies demonstrated a spirit of disobedience to God. In the New Testament, the Apostle Paul wrote of the Gentiles in Ephesians 2 and verse 2, Wherein in time past ye walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. And he warned those of such a spirit, Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. The Israelites did not go into the land, and they were made to wander in the wilderness 1 year, for each day the spies were gone, hence the 40 years wilderness wanderings. And all those 20 years old and upward died in the wilderness, except Joshua and Caleb. But the Bible tells us that Joshua and Caleb were of a different spirit. In Numbers 14, But my servant Caleb, because he has another spirit about him, and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land wherein he went, and his seed shall possess it. What is obedience? Obedience to God requires more than an outward performance of mechanical acts, such as a soldier might perform at the command of his general. The soldier might do exactly what he is told to do, but hate every minute and every movement involved. But, we say, so long as he carries out the orders, why, we contend that he obeyed his commander. But, friend, obedience to God involves more than that. Obedience to God must come from the heart. In Romans chapter 6, know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death, or of obedience unto righteousness? But God be thanked that ye were the servants of sin, but ye have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered you. We would contend that obedience to God involves attitude as well as action. When we worship, the heart is involved. Jesus said, God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. John 4 and verse 24. The heart, again, is involved in living the righteous life, as noted in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 22. Flee youthful lust, but follow righteousness and faith and charity and peace with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. And even our service before men is to be as a service before God because of the heart. Not doing eye service as men pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. Ephesians 6 and verse 6. Obedience certainly means doing the right thing, but with the right motive, the right intent, to do it with an understanding, voluntarily, willingly, and with a desire to please God. So we must develop in the heart the right attitude toward the commands of God and possess an obedient spirit. Dear listening friend, do you have an obedient spirit? How can we know if we have an obedient spirit? What are the marks of an obedient spirit? Well, don't you think a closer look at Joshua and Caleb in the events of long ago will help us to see what is the obedient spirit that we must have and that we must display? First of all, it means having a spirit of humility and submission and a denial of self. The proud egotist never bows to the will of another, even to the will of God. He is all for himself, to have his own way. In Philippians chapter 2, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ. Being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Our attitude must be, not my will, but thine be done. As Jesus taught, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Luke 9 and verse 23. Joshua called the refusal to go up to Canaan a rebellion against God. It was his desire that they obey God, regardless of the cost to themselves. He was humble enough to put God before himself. But again, an obedient spirit also means doing what God says, whether anyone else is willing to obey or not. Now, while we're not to parade our faith around for others to see in order to praise us, or do what we do simply to be different, we must do what God says is right, whether we stand alone or in the company of just a few or of many. Joshua and Caleb had to stand alone. So did Daniel and Moses and nearly every other faithful servant of God. Doing right just because others do right is not really having an obedient spirit. Those that will obey just because others do will likely disobey just because others do. And while we do not dismiss the value or the power of a good influence, our reason to obey must be more than simply obeying because somebody else does. We need to be as was Joshua at the close of his life when he said, "Choose ye this day whom ye will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Joshua 24 and verse 15. Have you ever noticed that sometimes when people have a falling out, one might say, "Well, I'll repent and forgive if he will." Or if one says that he will obey the gospel if his wife or her husband obeys. Well, what do you mean if somebody else does? The spirit of obedience means you will obey, you will do what is right, even if nobody else does. The attitude, friend, that we must have is simply, what would God have me to do? We're not to ask, what are others going to do? It's certainly easier to do right when others do, but we must do right anyway. And an obedient spirit means doing what God commands, whether it pleases us or our personal whims and preferences or not. Whether we even think it is reasonable or does not enter into it, it is not the spirit of obedience to obey God up to a point. We can be sure that every divine directive is for our good. But even if we cannot see it, we should obey nonetheless. One might ask, "But I don't see why I must do this or why I must do that." So what? If we have the spirit of obedience, we will obey anyway. Cain could have argued that way. So could have Nadab and Abihu. They had that kind of attitude. Joshua could have said the same thing when he was told to march around Jericho so many times. Naaman could have quibbled that way when he was told to go to the Jordan River and wash and be cleaned. Christ might have even stated something like that when he had to go to the cross. Some today rebel at being baptized in water because they say they don't see any sense in it. Friend, that's not the point. We must obey whatever God tells us to do, whether it appears reasonable to us or not. To obey just when it suits me or suits you is not true obedience. This would make man the judge of God's commands. This would put man before God. The story is told of some sons who were instructed by the father to plant grain in three different fields. One field was to be in corn, another in barley, and a third in wheat. Well, the sons agreed with the decision about the first two fields, but they thought oats would be better in the third field, and they acted accordingly. Now we raise the question, how many times did they obey their father? Well, actually not once. They always acted as they saw fit. Friend, that's not the spirit of obedience. The spirit of obedience does not allow for doing the least that one can do in the service of God. You know, some think they can just get by with doing as little as possible, and they will not do one thing more. What would you think of a parent who never did anything for his child more than just what was absolutely necessary and what was demanded of the parent? How much would you say a husband loved his wife if he never did more from her than what he thought he just had to do? Would not something vital be missing? Why do some children of God wish to serve God with that attitude? The spirit of obedience asks, "How much can I do?" It does not ask, "How little can I do and get by?" The spirit of obedience never asks the question, "Do I have to attend all the services of the church? Do I have to give again and again?" Absenteeism is a symptom of even a worse spiritual malady than absentism. It reflects a heart trouble. It lacks a spirit of obedience. I had a man to once ask me if I thought Hebrews 10:25 means he had to come on Wednesday night. Well, of course, I told him I believed that it did. But even if it did not, he would likely lose his soul because of the sorry attitude he had toward worship and Bible study. And he had not previously considered it that way. An obedient spirit means obeying God even when you meet opposition. People of God will meet opposition. They may even encounter persecution, 2 Timothy 3 and verse 12. It has been said that the spies and the Israelites had a grasshopper complex. Now Joshua and Caleb did not minimize the difficulties facing them, but they had a different spirit about them. Listen to them as they said in Numbers 13 and verse 30, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." What we ask is, what is right, before we ask, what are the consequences of doing right? Some count the cost of following Christ only to see if they really want to follow Him. But others count the cost to learn what is required of them so they can do what the Lord wants of them. They've already decided they're going to follow Christ regardless of the cost and regardless of the opposition. Well, opposition can come. It can come from friends and families and many other sources. As you study the lives of the faithful of God, you see that they all faced opposition. And yet, they did what God wanted them to do because they had the spirit of obedience. Daniel, Moses, Nehemiah, John the Baptist, Paul, name after name. And you see that that is the case with them. And the spirit of obedience says, I will obey God because of my love for Him. Jesus said, if ye love me, keep my commandments. John 14:15. In Luke 6:46, and why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? And in 1 John 5:3, for this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not grievous. I have seen bumper stickers that read, honk if you love Jesus. Friend, any old goose can honk. You do not show you love Jesus the same way you get a dog out of the road. You do not show you love Jesus by such trivia and parading around of such nonsense. You show you love Jesus by doing His will. And there are commands to obey. Commands to obey to become a Christian. Commands to obey to be a faithful Christian. We must do what He says with the right attitude, with the right motive, with the right intent, with the right understanding. In other words, we must have that spirit that says, not my will, but thine be done. We must do what is right, even if others do not. We must do what God says, even if we do not like it or even know why He commands it. We must do all that we can, not as little as we can. We must do what God says in spite of opposition. We must obey because we love Him as He first loved us. This is what it is to possess an obedient spirit, the kind of spirit that will enable us to live with God eternally. This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.